And welcome to the Earth First Update. I'm Uncle Dennis here at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We do this show Thursday nights at 9 p.m. right here in the underground studios. I'd like to have a pencil and paper handy. You could have one too. That way you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, dates, times, and localities. For getting all your activism done, and it's no more important now than it ever has been, given the change in, quote, leadership, unquote, in Washington. Here's an announcement from the California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team. They're having a restoration this Saturday, January 28th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Linda writes, "Winter has graced us with lots of recent rainstorms and cool nights, and it looks like some wonderful sunshine is heading our way. We have quite a bit of work ahead of us, so join us this Saturday in our efforts to knock back invasive French broom. If any of you would like to join us during the midweek for an additional project, let me know, and I'll give you that information in a minute. Hope to see you there Saturday, rain or shine. It looks like a sunny day this Saturday." How do you get to Quail Hollow Ranch? Well, go up Graham Hill Road from Santa Cruz. As you come down the hill into Felton, turn right at the light, go up East Diani Road for about 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road. Half a mile up on the right is the entrance to the park. Meet at the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80, wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they might call it a day. Tools are provided. Do bring your gloves and your water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You could email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net. Or you could go to their website at www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And coming up here very shortly is the Earth First Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous. The Hudson Valley Earth First Group is hosting the 2017 Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous this February 7th through the 14th. Get ready for some awesome workshops, winter hikes, music, campfires, and lots of fun. Smiley face. We are raising money to host 75 or more people for a week-long gathering of Earth Firsters, eco-defenders, and Earth-loving rebels nestled in the Catskill Mountains within the Hudson River watershed. We have reserved heated cabins to engage in important movement discussions and provide a space to plug into existing campaigns and projects in our bioregion. If you want to help fund them, go to Fundly, fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund. That is fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund. And hope you guys have fun out there in New York in February 7th through the 14th in the Hudson Valley. And the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action is coming up February 14th through the 20th. Mark your calendars and join us for our upcoming Week of Action. We are planning events in southwestern Montana towns, and there will be a national event for everyone everywhere to take part in. We welcome your ideas, and we need your energy and participation. Tentative schedule goes as follows. Tuesday, February 14th, they'll have a rally in Bozeman. Wednesday, February 15th, a march and candlelight vigil in Gardner. Thursday, February 16th, is the National Call-In Day across the nation with activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters. They'll host trainings in nonviolence and know your rights in West Yellowstone, Montana. Friday, February 17th, there'll be a special event in Helena, Montana. Saturday and Sunday, February 18th and 19th, rallies in West Yellowstone. Storytelling, culture sharing, and other activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters. And Monday, February 20th, there'll be a rally in Big Sky, Montana. Please join us for any or all of these events. Tell your friends and bring them with you. If you are able to come for a full week and would like to stay with us, please send RSVPs to Stephanie or McKenzie, media@buffalofieldcampaign.org or volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org so that they can make accommodations for sleeping spaces and food. Please bring your own bedding. For more details and exact times, please visit our events calendar, which you can find at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And their week of action, once again, is February 14th through 20th, all around Montana and Wyoming. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the wild buffalo. And here is their update from the field for this week. The very same government who declared the American bison our national mammal with such pomp and ceremony is hell-bent on destroying the last wild migratory population. Approximately 190 Yellowstone buffalo have now been trapped by the Yellowstone National Park employees who wear the image of a buffalo on their badges. These and hundreds more of the world's most beloved and important buffalo are destined to be reduced to meat within the cold walls of slaughterhouses. Just this week, however, Montana Governor Steve Bullock issued an executive order prohibiting Yellowstone from moving buffalo through Montana to slaughter until Yellowstone finds a temporary home for the 40 young buffalo who have been held captive in Yellowstone's trap since last February. These buffalo don't need a temporary home. They have a home. It's called the Yellowstone Ecosystem, where they roamed freely until last winter. While this executive order may stall the slaughter, it will not prevent it and will likely result in the nearly 200 buffalo who have been captured for slaughter being confined in the trap for a longer period of time. This is a game of political chess being played with the sacred buffalo, used as pawns in an attempt to quash a quarantine or domestication plan. Quarantine is not a solution and does not prevent slaughter. It is part of the larger problem of control and manipulation of wild migratory buffalo, which results in buffalo being repeatedly tested, many slaughtered, and survivors living behind fences until they are reduced to meat or die in captivity. Some quarantined buffalo have even been sent to zoos. Yellowstone's trap serves as a livestock model paradigm, quarantine and slaughter, and is an extreme danger to these wild genetic giants, the last of their kind. Buffalo who are able to evade capture by slipping past the trap face yet another imminent danger just a mile north of at Yellowstone's northern boundary and also along the park's western boundary in tiny portions of southwest Montana where so-called hunting is taking place. At least 185 buffalo have been stopped dead in their tracks with bullets. By the time you read this or hear this, that number will likely have risen. The other morning, we supported a solitary bull buffalo who was walking along dangerous parts of U.S. Highway 191. Following a safe distance with our hazard lights on, we stayed with him to warn traffic. There is so much snow piled up on the sides that it is very difficult for any buffalo to leave the highway, so on he went. Unfortunately, a group of passing state hunters spotted him too, and they immediately positioned their truck just ahead of the bull, moving at his speed, their exhaust blowing in his face. This part of the highway runs through Gallatin National Forest, so the hunters only needed to get him to move a few feet off the road in order to kill him. Their opportunity came when he got spooked by a passing vehicle. The bull jumped into the snowbank, and the hunters, if you can call them that, parked their truck illegally, it turns out. And a man with a tag grabbed his rifle and post-holed through the deep snow after the buffalo. We mistakenly thought that they needed to be much farther off the road before they could shoot, and we told them so. They yelled at us, saying that we were interfering, and the man with the rifle screamed, "I've waited 57 years for this," and pressed on, trudging a few more feet after the bull, who had moved a little deeper into the tree line. But the bull got away, at least for the moment. Authorities arrived and gave the hunters a warning for parking illegally, and then asked us to move on, too. We were elated in thinking that this handsome bull who had struggled so hard just to walk down the road had escaped with his life. Disaster narrowly averted, or so we thought. Afternoon patrols took over, and when they came home, they shared the bad news that the hunter had gone after the bull again, shooting and injuring him without pursuing him. Instead, he sat in the warmth of the truck waiting for him to reemerge from the forest. How could the hunter anticipate where the wounded buffalo might go and how could he not pursue him? The bull did emerge again, limping. He kept falling and getting up, disoriented and badly hurt. He was headed down a road that leads to the town dump, where he could not legally be shot. Authorities arrived, and because the bull was so badly wounded, the hunter was given special permission to kill him on the road. It took 4 shots at close range to finally end the life of this bull he had injured earlier. Now that's a really sad story. Anyway, you can find out more about Montana's wild buffalo at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And an environmental activist has been struck and killed by an SUV while marching barefoot across America. And this story by Corky Simazko of NBC News and was found on the Earth First Newswire. An environmental activist who was marching barefoot across the country to raise awareness about climate change was killed over the weekend. Mark Baumer, 33, died Saturday after being struck by an SUV on a Florida highway as he was walking along the shoulder. His death sparked a tribute from the Fang Collective, a Rhode Island-based environmental group that opposes the natural gas industry and on whose behalf he had already marched hundreds of miles and raised more than $3,000. Mark was amazingly compassionate, empathic, humble, joyful, generous, mindful, and caring person, the group said in a statement. He was a talented poet and artist with the ability to tap into the human experience with his work. Mark Baumer of Providence, Rhode Island, was walking westbound on the south shoulder of U.S. 90 in Walton County on the northwestern part of the state when he was struck at 1:15 in the afternoon by an SUV, according to the Florida Highway Patrol. The 51-year-old driver had been driving eastbound and failed to maintain her lane and entered the south shoulder before colliding with Baumer, the report states. Baumer was pronounced deceased at the scene, according to the report, and charges against the driver were pending on Monday. The activist's death came after he had logged his 100th day on the road in a post on his ominously named blog, notgoingtomakeit.com, which included an equally ominous photo of his bare toes beneath the word killed painted on yellow on a road. On day 100 of Crossing America Barefoot, I traveled from Dufuniak Springs, Florida to Mosseyhead, Florida, he wrote. Baumer then went on to chronicle his impressions from the journey, the disapproving looks he got when he stopped to buy kale at a grocery store, the call to his father, his fears about President Trump handling the nuclear codes. He also included a video and a poem which began, "A tree does some thoughts and thinks it doesn't look good for us." On his Barefoot Across America site, Baumer laid out his reasons for the trek. "I am crossing America barefoot to save the earth," he wrote. "Climate change is the greatest threat we've ever faced as a civilization. A lot of scientists agree. I'm not a scientist. I am a poet. I'm also a regular human being." Baumer said he set off on his journey October 13th. "I don't know when it will end," he wrote. On his site, Baumer also included a whimsical biography of sorts, which revealed that he had played baseball at Wheaton College in Massachusetts before he retired in 2006, that he had been accepted to a fiction writing program at Brown University, and he had worked at a library and owned a home. It also revealed he was no stranger to cross-country treks, having hitchhiked to California at least once and marched across the country in shoes in 81 days, the adventure he chronicled in a book called I Am a Road. FANG, whose acronym stands for Fighting Against Natural Gas, did not explain why Baumer was walking shoeless or immediately returned an email for comment, but in an interview last month with Vice, Baumer gave this explanation. "In 2010, I did a cross-country walk with shoes on," he said. "I wanted to do this walk for a cause and to use the attention to generate money for something good." And from Huasco, Chile, a community denies access to a Japanese mining firm. From El Cuidadano, translated by the Earth First Journal and found on the Earth First Newswire. A group of geologists working for the Japanese firm called Pan Pacific Copper Exploration, current owners of the Caserones mining project located in Tierra Amarilla in the Atacama region, could not enter because the Huasco Latino community stood in their way. On January 16th, around 11 a.m., people from the Valerano area surprised a group of Japanese people prospecting the mountain range where there are many water springs that feed the Huasco River, as well as one of the lagoons, which, like Laguna Chica, has archaeological and pre-colonial remains. When the people got close enough to ask those who were climbing who they were and what they were doing here, they answered that they were prospecting, which the inhabitants, most of them Huescolatinos, denied their passage. By preventing their entry, men on horseback launched themselves towards women who were blocking their path. The park ranger, a member of the Huascalatino community himself, asked the man in charge of the project for his permit. The man responded that the Huascalatinos were the people who had given it to them, to which the park ranger denied access, knowing that this was not the case. They were lying. The men did turn over a signed document between Christian Cayo Rostica and Norio Tsuchima, a geologist representative of the firm, both of whom live in Santiago, Chile. That document was destroyed by the community members, who, amid insults and stone-throwing, evicted the geologist. Creando Valle is an organization with a local identity born in the Huasco Valley that reunites and congregates First Nations to conserve, protect, and defend their ancestral lands. "We are not here to receive anyone with dirty interests," they protested. "We do this with our own hands. We do not need representatives. We are deeply empowered. The respect for our ancestors gives us the necessary courage. Our roots and indigenous identities are lifted with force and with our dignity and freedom, which will never be for sale," they warned. And a court ruling is a major victory for the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness and its wildlife in this story from WildernessWatch.org. A federal judge has ruled that the U.S. Forest Service illegally authorized the Idaho Department of Fish and Game to conduct approximately 120 helicopter landings to place radio collars on elk in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness last winter, in an operation in which the Idaho Department of Fish and Game also unlawfully collared four wolves. As a result, the court ruled the Forest Service and the IDFG are prohibited from using any data obtained from the illegally installed elk and wolf collars in future project proposals. IDFG must destroy the data received from the illegal collars, and the Forest Service must delay implementation of any future helicopter projects in the wilderness for 90 days to allow time for legal challenges. Today's decision vindicates the basic principle that a wilderness is supposed to be a wild area where, as Congress said, the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man, not a helicopter landing zone, said Earth Justice Attorney Tim Presso. The ruling by U.S. District Court Judge B. Lynn Windmill concludes that the Forest Service violated the Wilderness Act and conducted insufficient environmental review in allowing IDFG to land helicopters in the River of No Return in January of 2016 to capture and place radio telemetry collars on wild elk. IDFG also captured and radio collared four wolves during these operations, an unauthorized action that was not permitted by the Forest Service, but that threatened to advance IDFG's plans to undertake widespread wolf killing in the wilderness by providing locational information on the collared wolves. The Federal Wilderness Act prohibits the use of motorized vehicles, including helicopters, and requires preservation of natural conditions in wilderness areas. The judge found that these circumstances present a rare or extreme case where an injunction requiring destruction of the illegally obtained radio collar data is required, stating, "The IDFG has collected data in violation of federal law and intends to use that data to seek approvals in the future for more helicopter landings in the wilderness area. The only remedy that will directly address the ongoing harm is an order requiring destruction of the data." Helicopter operations that were illegally permitted by the Forest Service are part of IDFG's broader program to inflate elk numbers above natural levels within the wilderness by eliminating wolf packs that prey on the elk. IDFG's existing elk and predator management plans call for exterminating 60% of the wolf population in the heart of the River of No Return to provide more elk for hunters and commercial outfitters in an area that receives some of the lightest hunting use in the state. "This action by the Forest Service and IDFG violated everything that makes wilderness unique," said Wilderness Watch Conservation Director Kevin Proschult. It was an unprecedented intrusion with helicopters for the sole purpose of to make wildlife populations in wilderness conform to the desires of managers rather than accept and learn from the ebb and flow of nature. Gary McFarlane of Friends of the Clearwater added, "Wilderness by law is in contrast to areas that are heavily manipulated. Capturing elk with net guns from helicopters is heavy-handed manipulation and denigrates the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. This motorized intrusion into one of our premier wild areas has made all the worse by the fact that the Forest Service allowed the state to turn natural wolf predation on elk into a reason to degrade the wilderness with helicopter landings," said Ken Cole, Western Watershed Projects Idaho director. "We hope the court's ruling will compel the Forest Service to prioritize compliance with the Wilderness Act in the future decisions." And conservation groups challenge a permit to pollute the Elk River, and this story from the Environmental Protection Information Center. EPIC and the North Group Redwood Chapter Sierra Club filed a petition with the State Water Quality Control Board challenging last-minute changes to a new permit issued by the North Coast Regional Water Control Board to allow Humboldt Redwood Company to discharge sediment pollution into the Elk River near Eureka. On November 30th, the Regional Board held a permit hearing. At the hearing, the Regional Board made numerous changes that effectively removed many key water protections and passed the order. The Regional Board's actions not only frustrated public participation, but also violated state law by failing to provide adequate protections for the severely imperiled Elk River. "We need to ensure clean water, and this decision doesn't do that," said Tom Wheeler, Program Director at EPIC. "In a controversial decision like this, where the government is permitting more pollution in an already degraded river, we need more public participation, not less." The Elk River is the largest freshwater tributary into Humboldt Bay, flowing from its headwaters in the coastal mountains of northwest California to Humboldt Bay. The majority of the Upper Elk River subwatershed is composed of steep, greater than 35% slopes and easily erodible soils. Intensive logging by Pacific Lumber Company beginning in 1986 left the weak and unstable slopes susceptible to sediment pollution from landsliding and surface runoff. In short time, the once clear Elk River was filled with muck, infilling the river channel. This infilling has lessened the flow capacity of the river, meaning that during storm events, the river quickly floods. This flooding is more than a mere nuisance for residents of the Elk River watershed. Flooding has put lives at risk by closing important local roads and destroying property, including homes. Although Pacific Lumber Company went bankrupt, issues in the Elk River remain. Humboldt Redwood Company, which purchased land in the Elk River watershed from Pacific Lumber Company, continues to discharge sediment pollution, although in much smaller amounts. Humboldt Redwood Company sought a permit from the regional board to allow further pollution. This permit, called a waste discharge requirement, has been in development for over a year, and the public has been involved in its development. In their petition for administrative review, the Environmental Protection Information Center and North Group Redwood Chapter Sierra Club seek to remand the permit back to the Regional Water Quality Control Board with instructions to protect clean water and ensure public participation. And you can get more information about EPIC from their website, www.wildcalifornia.org. And China bans ivory trade to foil elephant poachers in this story from the Environment News Service. China will ban its domestic ivory trade by the end of 2017, the government announced recently. A new policy conservationists are calling a game changer for beleaguered African elephants. China will gradually stop the processing and sale of ivory for commercial purposes by the end of the year, the official Xinhua news agency said, referring to a government statement detailing a timetable for ending the ivory trade. Xinhua said the ban would affect 34 processing enterprises and 143 designated trading venues, with dozens to be closed by the end of March 2017. To meet Asia's demand for ivory, African elephants are being poached into oblivion. The results of the 2016 Great Elephant Census show African savanna elephant populations are down to 352,271 in 18 countries, a decline of 30% in the past 7 years. High numbers of elephant carcasses were found even in protected park areas. Publication of the timetable arises from a joint commitment that the presidents of China and the United States made during their meeting in Washington in September of 2015 to impose near-total ivory bans in their countries. New U.S. federal regulations were enacted on July 6th that prohibit the U.S. domestic ivory trade. Carved elephant ivory has long been valued as a status symbol in India. At their peak in 2014, prices topped $2,100 a kilogram. That's about $1,000 a pound, making the country a lucrative market for smugglers of poached ivory. Market inquiries in May 16 found raw ivory prices had declined to between $450 and $900 American dollars, according to the conservationist group Wild Aid, after China moved toward a partial ban earlier this year. A ban on the domestic ivory trade was also proposed to the National People's Congress by former NBA basketball star Yao Ming, who led documentaries on ivory trading for state broadcaster CCTV in partnership with Wild Aid. Wild Aid CEO Peter Knight said China's exit from the ivory trade is the greatest single step that could be taken to reduce poaching for elephants. We thank President Xi for his leadership and congratulate the State Forestry Administration for this timely plan. We will continue to support their efforts through education and persuading consumers not to buy ivory. The announcement follows China's move this March to widen a ban on imports of all ivory and ivory products acquired before 1975 after pressure to restrict a trade that sees thousands of elephants slaughtered every year. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.com. And you can hear our broadcast on our stream tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. You can also tune in to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 a.m. or KRFP 90.3, Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. WLSL broadcasts the Earth First Update on a frequency of 92.7 FM from Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. You can go on the internet to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, that's GDPRNashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you could tune in to Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 FM up in Berkeley, California, where they broadcast the Earth First Update sometimes, they tell me. And you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen anytime online, or you can download this or any previous Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week to another edition of the Earth First Update.